20. The Earth Charter. The Earth Charter is the brainchild of Gorbachev, acting as chairman of Green Cross International, and Maurice Strong, a wealthy and influential proponent of world government and a former executive director of the United Nations Environment Program. Strong says in his autobiography that world government is just not on. It is not necessary, not feasible, and not desirable. Maurice Strong, Where on Earth Are We Going? Vintage Canada, 2001, p. 308. Nevertheless, he proposes management of global affairs that will move in that direction. The cause and effect relationships that determine the way our policies and actions interact to create our future are systematic in nature, and therefore must be managed systematically. I have already said that we have to devise and accept global regulations that would impose constraints on our actions for the purpose of maximizing our long-term freedoms. Maurice Strong, IBID, pp. 308-309. Among the changes that Strong favors are granting of taxing and borrowing power to the UN. Maurice Strong, IBID, p. 328. Gorbachev and Strong wrote the charter to rectify what they saw as the excessively anthropocentric emphasis of the Declaration on the Environment produced at the 1992 UN conference in Rio de Janeiro. Gorbachev said of the Earth Charter, "We also need a new international environmental legal code rooted in an Earth Charter, a covenant similar to the United Nations Declaration on Human Rights. My hope is that this charter will be a kind of Ten Commandments, a Sermon on the Mount, that provides a guide for human behavior toward the environment in the next century and beyond." Maurice Strong said the same. The real goal of the Earth Charter is that it will in fact become like the Ten Commandments, like the Universal Declaration of Human Rights. It will become a symbol of the aspirations and the commitments of people everywhere. Gorbachev and Strong seem to view themselves as the lawgivers of the future, successors to Moses and Jesus. Stephen Rockefeller, a leader in the Earth Charter movement, extended this apotheosis of the charter. He told activists in 1998 that one can think of the Earth Charter with its tripartite structure as a tree of life. Supporters of the Earth Charter have taken the Ten Commandments symbolism further. In 2001, they built an Ark of Hope, a large wooden chest carried on poles and containing a copy of the Earth Charter on a papyrus scroll, one along with other environmental books. The Ark, created originally to honor the Earth Charter, is painted with indigenous symbolism celebrating Earth and all her living elements, animals, and children. The five painted panels which form the sides and top of the Ark each represent the flora and fauna of the world as seen through the images of the world's traditional artists. Each panel visualizes a season, a direction, one of the five elements, and a universal symbol. Symbols of faith from traditional religions and indigenous societies surround the top panel of spirit, which honors the children and young animals of the world. The carrying poles are fashioned like unicorn horns which, according to legend, render evil ineffective. 2. Earth Charter supporters carried the Ark from Vermont to New York City in 2001. It was exhibited at the UN and at the New York Interfaith Center in early 2002. 3. The Ark then traveled to South Africa in August and September 2002 for the UN World Summit on Sustainable Development. 4. Since then, the Ark has traveled within the U.S. When it is not on the road, it is displayed at the Interfaith Center of New York. 5. One of the changes that Gorbachev envisions is world government. When he founded Green Cross International, he said, "The emerging environmentalization of our civilization and the need for vigorous action in the interest of the entire global community will inevitably have multiple political consequences. Perhaps the most important of them will be a gradual change in the status of the United Nations. Inevitably, it must assume some aspects of a world government. Indeed, such a process has already begun." 6. Jim Garrison, president of the State of the World Forum, agreed. In 1995, he said, "Over the next 20 to 30 years, we are going to end up with world government. It's inevitable." 7. He likened opponents to Confederate secessionists and the Oklahoma City bombers. 8. In 2004, Garrison used bureaucratic language to describe the same globalist vision. "The current system of nation-states needs to be replaced by a transnational system of integrated global management. This will necessitate the development of network democracy and global issue networks, which enhance the power of governments by bringing the expertise of the civil society and business sectors to bear on specific issues of concern." 9. He stated that America must consciously view itself as a transitional empire, one whose destiny at this moment is to act as midwife to a democratically governed global system. Its great challenge is not to dominate but to catalyze. It must use its great strength and democratic heritage to establish integrating institutions and mechanisms to manage the emerging global system so that its own power is subsumed by the very edifice it helps to build. If it attains this level of greatness, it could become the final empire, for it will have bequeathed to the world a democratic and integrated global system in which empire will no longer have a place or perform a role. One Friar Luis Dolan of the URI said that the future world government must have a religious basis. Global governance is portrayed as essentially a civil ideal. It will not work, though, unless it is also presented as a religious ideal. Two Earth Charter commissioners include Federico Mayer, former Director General of UNESCO, Stephen Rockefeller, Chairman of the Rockefeller Brothers Fund, Ruud Lubbers, UN High Commissioner for Refugees, and Leonardo Boff, the Catholic proponent of liberation theology. Point 3. The Earth Charter Initiative's aims are to promote the dissemination, endorsement, and implementation of the Earth Charter by civil society, business, and government, to encourage and support the educational use of the Earth Charter, to seek endorsement of the Earth Charter by the UN. Point 4. Once adopted by the UN, the Charter would be the starting point to create new, binding law, internationally, nationally, and locally. Stephen Rockefeller, a key drafter of the Charter, explained, "If the Earth Charter is endorsed by the UN General Assembly, it will begin to have the significance of a soft law document, like the UN Universal Declaration of Human Rights. Soft law documents are viewed as statements of intentions and aspirations, and not as binding agreements. However, in the history of international law, soft law tends to become hard law over time. In this regard, the Earth Charter is being drafted in coordination with a hard law treaty that is designed to provide an integrated legal framework for all environmental and sustainable development law. This hard law treaty is being prepared by the World Conservation Union, IUCN, and is referred to as the Draft International Covenant on Environment and Development. Point 5. This hard law would then govern the development and interpretation of local, state, and federal laws. As Gorbachev said in 2000, "The ideas that inspired us in the Earth Charter are shaped there in the form of international law, based on which national legislation could be adopted. Also in the International Court at The Hague, we could have an environmental tribunal that would take charge of implementation of that convention." 6. Gorbachev and Strong had hoped to gain UN adoption of the Earth Charter in 2002, at the World Summit for Sustainable Development, and then by the General Assembly. This did not occur. Nevertheless, the Charter has won endorsement from UNESCO. The Earth Charter Initiative says, more endorsements, including from UN agencies, are expected, and the pursuit of this objective remains an important goal of the initiative. At the 2002 UN World Summit for Sustainable Development, heads of state, or their representatives, from Costa Rica, the Dominican Republic, Jamaica, Jordan, Mexico, Niger, Romania, and the Netherlands offered their support to the Earth Charter. Additionally, the Earth Charter continues to gain mainstream and liberal supporters. Valerie Giscard d'Estaing, the United Nations University, the Florida League of Cities, the U.S. Conference of Mayors, 220 cities and towns in Spain, 98 municipalities in Jordan, 23 towns and cities in Vermont, including Burlington and Montpelier, several campuses of Antioch University, Cairo University, Colgate University, the University of Connecticut, the International Association of Universities, Ben and Jerry's Foundation, the Lindbergh Foundation, the Brahma Kumaris World Spiritual University, the Council for a Parliament of the World's Religions, several nations chapters of the Soka Gakkai, the Unitarian Universalists in the U.S., the Millennium Institute, the Natural Resources Defense Council, the Odd Fellows, the Sierra Club, Physicians for Social Responsibility, the Humane Society of the U.S., the World Federalist Association, the Club of Budapest, the City of Berkeley, California, the Senate of Puerto Rico, and the governments of Honduras and Bolivia. The Charter is also popular among New Age, Theosophical, Occult, and 60s-style counterculture groups. The Amok Rosicrucian Order, the Association of Waldorf Schools in the United States, Findhorn, the Foundation for Conscious Evolution, Genesis Farm, the Great Barrington Rudolf Steiner School, a regional office of the Institute of Noetic Sciences, the Institute for Global Spirituality, the Institute for Planetary Synthesis, the Robert Mueller School, the School of Ageless Wisdom and World Goodwill. Other odd groups support the Charter: Anarchist Action, the Association of Kimri Wiccai, Backrubs2go.org, the Church of the Earth Nation, the Florida Cannabis Action Network, Great Old Broads for Wilderness, the Knights of Gaia, and the Pantheist Awareness Network. The charter has gained the endorsement of Pax Christi International and Pax Christi USA, the Canadian Catholic Organization for Development and Peace, the National Board of the Leadership Conference of Women Religious, the National Coalition of American Nuns, and about 100 Catholic religious orders and houses, mostly nuns, worldwide. In addition, two Catholic dioceses have endorsed the Earth Charter. The social justice offices in three other Catholic dioceses have also signed on as supporters. The proponents of the Earth Charter acknowledge that it represents a moral revolution. In a paper on the Earth Charter website in 2004, a theologian at the Union Theological Seminary said, "The Earth Charter is an assault on the institutionalized anthropocentrism of reigning practices and their morality. Even to say humanity is part of a vast evolving universe and to view Earth as a remarkable niche in that universe and alive, because it is the bearer and sustainer of a unique community of life, is already to invert the orientation of prevailing ethics. In fact, the very moral universe that gave us universal human rights does not accord well with the Earth Charter ethic. The Earth Charter wants to decenter the sovereign human self, historically, an androcentric and white Western self, who is the moral legislator and whose very notion of freedom rests in giving ourselves the laws we live by. But the universal rights tradition combines the rightful assertion of human dignity as the norming norm with a practical and deeply institutionalized morality of the sovereign human subject as legislator over all else. The Charter does not accept this. The Earth Charter, a velvet glove. The basis of the Earth Charter is the belief that humanity is part of a vast, evolving universe. Earth, our home, is alive with a unique community of life, too, a combination of the Gaia hypothesis and Teilhard de Chardin's vision of cosmic evolution. The Charter states that an unprecedented rise in human population has overburdened ecological and systems, 3, the Malthusian population bomb argument. The preamble continues, "Fundamental changes are needed in our values, institutions, and ways of living. For to bring this about, we urgently need a shared vision of basic values to provide an ethical foundation for the emerging world community. Therefore, together in hope, we affirm the following interdependent principles for a sustainable way of life as a common standard by which the conduct of all individuals, organizations, businesses, governments, and transnational institutions is to be guided and assessed. 5. The Charter's scope is, by intent, all-encompassing. The Charter sets forth 4 broad commitments. 1. Respect Earth and life in all its diversity. 2. Care for the community of life with understanding, compassion, and love. 3. Build democratic societies that are just, participatory, sustainable, and peaceful. 4. Secure Earth's bounty for present and future generations. 6. Realizing this vision would require comprehensive environmental regulation. Adopt at all levels sustainable development plans and regulations that make environmental conservation and rehabilitation integral to all development initiatives. Manage the use of renewable resources such as water, soil, forest products, and marine life in ways that do not exceed rates of regeneration and that protect the health of ecosystems. Manage the extraction and use of non-renewable resources such as minerals and fossil fuels in ways that minimize depletion and cause no serious environmental damage. 7. The Charter does not specify who will be doing this management or to whom the new managers will be accountable. Whoever the future environmental planners are, they are called upon to apply a precautionary approach. Take action to avoid the possibility of serious or irreversible environmental harm even when scientific knowledge is incomplete or inconclusive. Place the burden of proof on those who argue that a proposed activity will not cause significant harm, and make the responsible parties liable for environmental harm. One with this provision, the purveyors of alarmism and junk science would be able to tie the economy into knots. The Charter asks us all to adopt patterns of production, consumption, and reproduction that safeguard Earth's regenerative capacities, human rights, and community well-being. To some of the ideas, minimizing generation of waste products, fostering energy efficiency, and promoting the development and spread of environmentally sound technology are reasonable. However, the proposal to internalize the full environmental and social costs of goods and services in the selling price 3 opens the door to arbitrary, political price setting. And the killer idea, literally, In the Charter's green rhetoric is the call to ensure universal access to healthcare that fosters reproductive health and responsible reproduction. For in UN circles, reproductive health includes artificial contraception, abortion, and sterilization. For Charter proponents, socialism is still a good idea. In order to ensure that economic activities and institutions at all levels promote human development in an equitable and sustainable manner, the Charter urges us to promote the equitable distribution of wealth within nations and among nations. 5. The Charter says that we should require multinational corporations and international financial organizations to act transparently in the public good and hold them accountable for the consequences of their activities. 6. So far, so good, but this call to transparency and accountability should also apply to foundations, international non-governmental bodies, national governments, and all international agencies. The Charter commits itself to feminism, urging us all to affirm gender equality and equity as prerequisites to sustainable development and ensure universal access to education, healthcare, and economic opportunity. Promote the active participation of women in all aspects of economic, political, civil, social, and cultural life as full and equal partners, decision makers, leaders, and beneficiaries. 7. The call for women to act as decision makers, leaders in all social and cultural institutions could become the basis of a demand for ordination of women priests and bishops in Catholic and Orthodox churches. In one of the few references to gay rights in UN-related documents, the Charter calls for us to eliminate discrimination in all its forms, such as that based on race, color, sex, sexual orientation, religion, language, and national, ethnic, or social origin. 8. To implement these radical changes, education, the arts, the media, and religious teachers must step into line worldwide. The Charter proposes that we integrate into formal education and lifelong learning the knowledge, values, and skills needed for a sustainable way of life. Provide all, especially children and youth, with educational opportunities that empower them to contribute actively to sustainable development. Promote the contribution of the arts and humanities, as well as the sciences in sustainability education. Enhance the role of the mass media in raising awareness of ecological and social challenges. Recognize the importance of moral and spiritual education for sustainable living. All, children and adults alike, are to undergo lifelong catechesis in the principles of sustainable living. Education is to change its role from transmitting traditional wisdom to the furtherance of a sustainable way of life. And the media are to shift from the ideal of truthful reporting to the new goal of raising awareness. To bring about these changes, all must commit ourselves to adopt and promote the values and objectives of the Charter. This requires a change of mind and heart. It requires a new sense of global interdependence and universal responsibility. We must imaginatively develop and apply the vision of a sustainable way of life locally, nationally, regionally, and globally. The Charter adds, we must find ways to harmonize diversity with unity, the exercise of freedom with the common good, short-term objectives with long-term goals. This assumes that the human race is a unitary, we, that can harmonize these competing goals in a way that is acceptable to all. With this ideological shift, there must also be political change. The partnership of government, civil society, and business is essential for effective governance. In order to build a sustainable global community, the nations of the world must renew their commitment to the United Nations, fulfill their obligations under existing international agreements, and support the implementation of Earth Charter principles with an international legally binding instrument on environment and development. That's the end point of all the rhetoric. Having all social institutions work together to realize the new ecological and social ideals, and having the principles of the Earth Charter backed up by a legally binding instrument. The drafters of the Earth Charter do wish to strengthen democratic institutions at all levels and provide transparency and accountability in governance, inclusive participation in decision-making and access to justice, as well as to protect the rights to freedom of opinion, expression, peaceful assembly, association, and dissent. For those who value freedom, that's one of the few consolations in the document. The Green Cross Philosophy, the Earth Charter's Iron Fist. However, another document on the Earth Charter website, the Earth Charter, the Green Cross Philosophy, prepared by Gorbachev's Green Cross International, takes a much harder line. It makes explicit the totalitarian implications of the Earth Charter's vague, high-flown call for reform. 5. First comes the call for fundamental economic, social, and cultural changes. The current course of development is thus clearly unsustainable. Current problems cannot be solved by piecemeal measures. More of the same is not enough. Radical change from the current trajectory is not an option, but an absolute necessity. Fundamental economic, social, and cultural changes that address the root causes of poverty and environmental degradation are required, and they are required now. One then comes a call for stabilization of the world's population and zero growth of material economy. Principle 6. Stabilization of the world's population. A. World population must stabilize. Such a balance can be reached through cooperation. An improvement in living conditions, quality of life, fairness, education, and the eradication of poverty. Principle 7. Zero growth of material economy. A. Even allowing for rapid technological improvements, resources are finite. A basic sustainable level of per capita material consumption will have to be reached in accordance with the Earth's natural resource constraints. This requires both increasing the material consumption of the people now living in poverty and reducing material overconsumption by the rich minority. 2. Scientific uncertainty about the efficiency, efficacy, and necessity of radical environmental policies will not be allowed to interfere. Principle 12. Precautionary principle. A. Precaution must be the basic organizing principle of environmental management. Scientific uncertainty should be used for objective assessment and not as an excuse for delaying action. Principle 13. Prevention of environmental damage. A. Protection of the environment is most effective when environmental harm is prevented rather than cured. End-of-pipe solutions are not sustainable and must be replaced by preventive action which stops problems before they arise. Prevention ensures a common inheritance for future generations. 3. To enforce all this, the Green Cross philosophy states that there must be global sovereignty, which must not be subservient to the rules of state sovereignty, demands of the free market, or individual rights. Principle 14. Global sovereignty, A. The protection of the biosphere, as the common interest of humanity, must not be subservient to the rules of state sovereignty, demands of the free market, or individual rights. The idea of global sovereignty must be supported by a shift in values which recognize this common interest. Implementation 1. The creation of an international body for the sustainability of human life on the Earth. This body must have the independence and power to facilitate agreement between all societal actors to support the protection of the biosphere as the common interest of humanity. For to put a new social and economic system in place, there must be new education. 4. To accelerate the implementation of a new social and economic system based on the respect of the existing limits of the biosphere, priority must be given to education and, in particular, environmental education. Democratic institutions must not delay the Earth Charter revolution. At the 1995 State of the World Forum, Maurice Strong said, "We shouldn't wait until political democracy paves the way. We must act now." One in this vein, it is notable that Strong's Earth Council has recently clashed with at least one democratic government. In 2003, the Costa Rican government sought a $1.65 million penalty for what it alleged was the Earth Council's wrongful sale of donated property. 2. As a result, the Earth Council said that it is not possible for the Earth Council to function in Costa Rica until the situation is resolved and the financial viability of the Earth Council is reestablished. 3. And unless the Costa Ricans come to heel, more international facilities may go. As the Earth Council says, this unfortunate experience of the Earth Council will also affect the attitudes of other international organizations in deciding whether to locate in Costa Rica. It is therefore hoped and expected that this forced suspension will be of a temporary nature. For like Strong, Gorbachev is impatient for change. The former head of the USSR said, "The process of change is proceeding very slowly, and from the standpoint of the global ecological situation, it is proceeding too slowly. The Green Cross International must become the catalyst and an accelerator of this process." 5. He proposed a strategy of social change by pressure on the status quo from above and from below. Any change in society is the result of the interaction of changes from above and from below. Changes from above are affected by leaders, by parliaments, by those who make decisions and approve laws and rules, who develop and define priorities and adopt budgets. The second category of changes are those implemented by ordinary citizens, social movements in the various parties, philosophers, by all those who accept and develop new ideas, by those who protest and those who defend their dreams, their visions. These changes are not always visible, but through interaction of human beings, through personal contacts and direct influence, they transform the spiritual climate. The two lines of change are interrelated. They reinforce each other. The ideas coming from the bottom up must be accepted by the authorities above, but the decisions taken above cannot succeed without support from below. If from this standpoint you look at the ecological situation, it becomes apparent that many things must happen along both of those lines of change, and particularly in terms of their interaction. Helping to bring about this interaction is what the Green Cross International is going to do. Point 6, both Earth Charter leaders are determined to hurry us into a new, ecological society. Then, after the charter is adopted and implemented, with or without a democratic process, the new international body will not be subservient to the rules of state sovereignty, demands of the free market, or individual rights. Such are the principles that Gorbachev and Strong, and their collaborators in the URI and elsewhere in the interfaith movement, would have us adopt as a new covenant with the earth, a new Ten Commandments.